Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube. Social media has influenced every single point of view and stage of the political field. It is a game changer in this realm, exposing sociocultural issues and exposing sociocultural truths like none other before. And today, your hosts, Varun Kadathala and Damian Galvin, will be really exposing how social media has influenced today's political stage and how it has turned this stage upside down. Welcome to a new form of podcast, Polititeen.
So, me and Varun, we first want to start off of this podcast by sending our condolences to the family of George Floyd and anyone else that has lost their lives to police brutality and systemic racism in this country. Unfortunately, at this point in time, that's a long list of names, but we do want to send our condolences to everyone that has been subject to death or oppression because of the system.
Right, it is a completely long list of names, and 25th of May was a very sad day for America. For me personally, I was very, very saddened by the amount of brutality that George Floyd received, and I think that's the main deciding factor of this podcast, along with the deaths of Breonna Taylor and many other people in our nation due to systemic racism, things like this.
Yeah, I agree with Varun, and today we saw even more names trending on Twitter, more victims of police brutality. Unfortunately, the list seems to keep increasing with more and more names every day. And as the riots continue throughout our nation, we only expect to see the list grow.
Agreed. So just a little background about myself. My name is Varun. I am a sophomore, a rising junior in high school from Georgia. And honestly, I'm just very, very saddened and angry and motivated to do something about the events that are occurring today. And that's the reason why I decided to partner up with Damian and to create this podcast to discuss our views upon social issues today and how social media has also influenced our understanding of social issues and things like that.
I agree with Varun. My name is Damian Galvin. I'm also a rising junior. And much like Varun, the issues that that we face in society today have led me to kind of want to be a voice in society and try to make whatever change I can make on whatever platform I can. And hopefully me and Varun, through this podcast and through our efforts, we'll be able to achieve that and see the change that we want to bring in America.
Correct. And obviously it's the first time we are streaming today, and it's going to be rusty. It's going to be flawed. But our podcast, it is a statement of how we want to change what is occurring and to make our opinions voiced and our opinions known, because as people, we have a voice, and it is important that we do represent our views by using our voice. Politeen as a podcast is going to primarily deal with big issues today, as I said before, and mostly how social media platforms like Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook have dealt with these phenomenons and how the people have dealt with these phenomenons. Again, social media is by the people, for the people, and authored completely based upon our opinions as people. And we're going to use this to really expose the truth about certain issues. Damian?
Yeah, I agree with Varun completely. Moments ago, we saw the President of the United States enact, I don't particularly recall the name. I don't know if you do, Varun, but he enacted something that hasn't been used in 207 years, if I'm not mistaken, for the first time on military, on U.S. civilians.
Right. And Mr. President Trump has declared war on the American people, as many people are doing and talking about on Twitter, on social media. It is a blatant declaration of war upon our people, and that's what we're really outraged about today.
And unfortunately, the first step that we saw taken after this declaration of war was made was the president taking a photo shoot in front of St. John's Church, the Church of the Presidents. And it's very unfortunate that we're seeing the people's military be used in such a way just for a photo op. What are your thoughts on that, Varun?
I agree. I think that it is a publicity stunt. Our president today is publicizing and using the issues, George Floyd's death, police brutality, as a publicity stunt. And that is simply not okay on the political stage. We need to be pushing for greater acceptance and greater diversity instead of just taking photo shoots and things like this. I mean, you saw your president, our president, going on at the church and saying, you know, citing, holding up a Bible and saying 2 Corinthians instead of 2 Corinthians. Even though I'm not Christian, I do see that as complete ignorance and just publicity, a publicity stunt.
Well, not to mention that the president has only visited St. John's Church a handful of times throughout his entire presidency, not that I can recall at least. And he decides to visit the church only after it's been graffitied in order to sort of, what I believe is use it as a political message, showing that these protesters are not truly trying to reflect the memory of George Floyd, but rather that they're committing acts of violence and that they're destroying the cities in America.
Agreed, Damien. And you make a very valid point. Trump has been downing protesters and his rhetoric and things of that matter. And he tells us today at the Rose Garden that he is an ally of protesters, where we see just not even a mile away outside of the White House, protesters are being tear gassed by police officers to get them out of the way. And these are peaceful protesters. They aren't people causing riots. They aren't people causing looting incidents, but they're peaceful protesters who are being disbanded because the president does not support them. They call himself an ally less than a mile away.
I wanted to bring up the whole conversation of peaceful protesters becoming rioters. And what I've seen is that usually these events only occur, you know, the looting and the buildings being lit on fire. These events usually only occur after police show up. I don't know if police are being seen as instigators here, but you have to remember that you're dealing with a political scene. You're having protests because police are abusing their power, and your response is to send more police officers to go and confront these rioters. I don't see that as responsible. I know that you want to obviously control them, but you're only going to anger people, in my opinion, if you go and send police officers there when they're trying to confront the issues that police officers are bringing into their lives.
Right, and we tweeted about it today on our Twitter at Polititeen Show. Suppressing our protesters, our rights, and our voice as people is not going to stop the crisis at hand. And that's a direct message to our president. It is going to incite a fire and add fuel to our already glowing, growing flame. And one of the biggest issues that we're dealing with today is that protesters are being completely ignored and violently taken out by police officers and by National Guard individuals. If you haven't seen on Twitter, there have been NYPD SWAT trucks, you know, who have been zooming in like to crowds of peaceful protesters, which obviously is going to cause discontent, is going to cause violence because these are police officers instigating these in many, many isolated instances.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. And I want to know what you think particularly. What do you think is causing these protests to turn into riots?
I think it is first of all, first and foremost, pent up frustration at how peaceful protests are not being are simply not being recognized. Because we have dealt with protests like this, the LA riots, the exact same thing. Because we have dealt with things like these for the last few centuries. People have been protesting at city fruit. And I think rioting is simply a testament, Damien, of the American people saying we've had enough.
You know, I couldn't agree with you more. You know, you had Martin Luther King. I'm not going to remember the quote exactly, but he said along the lines that riots are the voices of those who are unheard. And now you have a president in office who's trying to suppress even those voices, who's trying to make those who feel that they have to cause destruction in order to bring a message in America, he's answering their requests to be heard by shushing them even more. And I think it's at this point, You've seen, you know, the scandals with porn stars, with this president. You've seen the scandals amid other issues with the president. But I think the word disgrace does not stand enough out in this situation. I'm at a loss for words at how much we looked at those situations and thought this is disgusting. But it's almost like the word disgusting has been underspoken at this point.
Honestly, to be honest, I think the meaning of disgusting for me has changed as a citizen.
Yeah.
Because what I have thought of as disgusting has been boasted and pushed through social media, pushed through the news as a good thing. And it disgusts me even more, and it makes me put almost a lower standard to disgusting.
Yeah. Well, I remember back in Obama's presidency, one of the big scandals of Obama's presidency was the fact that he would not wear a tie in his office. And I remember Fox News reporting stories on the fact that the president of the United States would not wear a tie in his office, and they would candidate unpresidential. They call the president of the United States not wearing a tie in his office unpresidential. And honestly, if you even compare that to the least non-presidential thing that Donald Trump has done, it doesn't stand a light. I mean, you have the president of the United States addressing the grieving citizens of his nation in 240 characters on a tweet.
It is riveting. It is. And when you're talking about things being unpresidential in the view of Fox News, of right-wing commentators, it's important to look at even congresswomen and congressmen. For example, AOC posted that she was, you know, playing Animal Crossing with her followers on her device. And a Republican congresswoman immediately shot back and said, "Is this what we're paying our politicians to do? You know, it is free time. People have free time." I think any individual who is doing anything even a little bit controversial is being pushed on it. Because our partisan lines have not been blurred enough to where people can see the real issues, and that is a real issue today.
Well, you know, you mentioned partisan lines, and I think we're ignoring. I think someone's being swept under the rug here, and I think that it's time that he's called out instead of the president of the United States. And his name is Mitch McConnell. I think that Mitch McConnell always gets away with being destructive, and it's always pinned on the president, or it's always pinned on the GOP. But honestly, Mitch McConnell has a disgusting track record. And if we really want to save the GOP, which, I mean, even me as someone who would consider themselves centrist, I want to see two political parties in competition in order to make change in America that is best for all the citizens. But right now, you only see one man in power, and that's Donald Trump, because Mitch McConnell has not stood up to him. He's afraid to stand up to him. I don't know necessarily what the issue is, but he's almost an instigator onto Donald Trump. He allows him to get away with countless actions, and I think that it's time that in November, not only we remove Donald Trump from office, but we won't see change unless Mitch McConnell is removed. Because you had in the Obama era, Mitch McConnell rejecting pieces of legislation that Obama would offer. He wouldn't even bring them onto the Senate floor. For what reason?
And he has that power, and he's abusing that power as he did back then. He's doing the same thing now. And that's why Obama couldn't get as much done in his second term, because of Mitch McConnell and how he was abusing his power. And I completely agree. I think Mitch McConnell is a means to Donald Trump's madness. He is the reason why Donald Trump is so powerful in today's world, because he allows all of this to happen, and he also makes sure that congressmen are not kept able to say their own opinions. For example, in the impeachment vote, I think a lot of congressmen and congresswomen would have been able to vote for impeachment. However, because of Mitch McConnell and because of these politicians who are saying, "Vote this way or your career is at risk," these congressmen and congresswomen are not able to, you know, express their opinions and go against their partisan lines. Because everything right now is about party, and that's not the way it should be. It should be about your personal opinion and your voice.
And first and foremost, it should be about your country. And I see that line being blurred more and more every day. And unfortunately, once again, as someone that considers myself very centrist in a lot of political issues, it's coming a lot from the GOP, from the Republicans, where they're becoming more and more extreme. Sometimes I ask myself, you know, may he rest in peace, John McCain. What would he do in these situations? What would he say in the impeachment of Donald Trump? It's a question that you have to ask yourself. I think that is one of the most bipartisan leaders that we have had in the United States of America. And I would really like to see his leadership in effect right now. But unfortunately, it's something that we can't have.
Right, John McCain, may he rest in peace, was a courageous man. And he was a very educated politician. And being one of the only people who voted for Medicare for All to stay in legislation, he went against his party. And we saw that happen. And he really, really made a big statement out there to say, I am for my country. And I am not for the GOP. I'm not for the Democrats. I am not for anywhere in the middle. I am for my country first and foremost, as you said. And he inspires me.
Yeah.
John McCain, John Kasich, these politicians on the Republican side inspire me the most because they care about their country.
And I never thought I'd see the day where I'm looking up to Mitt Romney. You have Mitt Romney taking a greater stand than Mitch McConnell. The man who ran against Barack Obama has more dignity and respect than Mitch McConnell. And he has, most importantly, respect onto his country and onto himself, onto his own ideas, where he's not just going to be Donald Trump's the dog on a leash. You have all these Republican senators almost being used as political pawns to get whatever the president or Mitch McConnell wants.
It's a perfect way of saying it. And I think they're left to clean up his mess. And that is a real issue. Because if we're talking about Donald Trump's rhetoric, it has been very controversial. And even Twitter has banned one of Donald Trump's tweets because it has been inciting violence. And I think that's a big issue today. That Twitter, a big social media channel, has to come out and ban its president's tweet. And that said, Trump also came out and posted that same tweet on his White House Twitter channel. You know, obviously going against Twitter guidelines, and he knows he's doing that. That's an issue. And these congresswomen are having to clean up after his mess.
Yeah, well, how do we feel about Twitter actually doing these things?
You know, I have to say, I'm proud.
Yeah.
I'm very proud because Twitter and their management has come out and done this and shown that they're willing to uphold what they said they were going to do. And Mark Zuckerberg, the CEO of Facebook and the now owner of Instagram, has not done any such thing. And he has not, you know, gone out and said that this tweet, which Trump did post on Instagram and Facebook, is bad and is inciting violence, as he said he would do before. I think one of his quotes, I can't entirely quote it, but he did say that I will hold any person accountable in a, you know, obviously shortened form, if they do incite violence on my platform, which he has not done. And even reporters are coming out and asking Mark Zuckerberg and Facebook and Instagram what their reason for this is. They have not given a comment.
Yeah,
which is really.
I find that interesting. I remember there was a period, maybe a couple months ago, where you would go on Instagram and everything was being fact checked. I don't know if you recall that, but it's almost like even things on meme pages were being fact checked. And it's very interesting to see kind of Facebook doubling down on that and not necessarily enforcing that on the person that maybe has the most influence and definitely has the most influence politically in the entire world. I mean, this is the leader of the free nation, or of the free world, rather. And they're not enforcing it with him. And you have to ask yourself why.
Right. It's a valid question. You know, why is it not being enforced? Are politicians, you know, immune to receiving the same treatment as us as people? You know, Zuckerberg was a very valiant you know, person who didn't like fact checking. You know, he was talking about how First Amendment should be upheld and any right and facts should not be as highly honored. And I think the reasoning behind that, Damian, is not because he was a believer in that. I think Mark Zuckerberg at that point in time and even now was bought and sold by politicians.
I agree.
By the GOP.
I agree.
And I think that Facebook's employees are realizing that. And I think they staged an online walkout today I was looking at on Twitter, which shows that they just do not agree. And even if they don't have a place to work or a place to walk out from, they are showing their resistance to this in any way possible.
Well, I wasn't aware of that, but I think it's becoming a scary time for Facebook. I mean, you had them in the 2016 election. They were framed for, you know, supporting Donald Trump or being a platform in which Russian bots could support Donald Trump. And I think ever since then, they've tried to be a lot more careful. And I think that they've gone so far with being so careful that it's beginning to hurt them more and more. I think that they're afraid of Donald Trump and what he's able to do. I mean, you even saw him sign executive action in order to go against these online social media platforms.
Right, and I completely agree. I couldn't agree less. I couldn't agree more. Sorry about that. And I think the biggest issue today is that words matter, and words mean a lot. And we're seeing that in Trump's rhetoric. I'm reading off of here, off of my notes from Twitter, and 54 cases involving the term Trump, 54 criminal cases, that is, are in connection with violence. And what I'm talking about is a Latino gas attendant was punched by a white man who at last in court said this is for Trump. You know, that is a real issue today. 12 cases hail Trump. You know, after or in the midst of a violent incident, 18 cases had perpetrators cheering Trump and extorting others while in court or before court. So I think his rhetoric is very, very demeaning and causing violent actions and validating these actions, giving these people who are committing these violence acts of violence some validations. And looking at Obama and Bush, ABC News couldn't find a single case that brought in their names as evidence of violent acts. And under Trump, 54 cases. Thoughts?
Well, I think that we're overlooking a big thing when we say violent acts. I think that more so than violent acts, they have been mental attacks on people of Asian descent, people of Latino descent. I mean, the first thing he said, me being a Hispanic, the first thing that he said when he announced his campaign was he called my Latino, everyone's Latino brothers and sisters, rapists and drug dealers. And from that day forward, I would get rhetoric about, you know, Trump 2020, oh, you're going to be deported, this or that. And, you know, I am someone that's able to handle it, that's able to handle it very easily. But you have to begin to wonder what happens to those people that maybe they had a father deported, and you have their classmates making fun of them because Donald Trump is going to be elected. You have to think about the Asians, the Asian people in Asian Americans in this country that are being called bat eaters, that are being called all these things because Donald Trump refuses to call coronavirus and insists on calling it the Chinese virus, something that he knows will instigate hate, something that he knows will cause racial tensions in America. He refuses to back down on his stances on both Latinos, Asians, Muslims. It's something that is absolutely disgusting. And I think that that's being overlooked more so than the violence. It's the harassment that the minorities in this country are taking due to the president's words.
Right. It doesn't stop at Trump. It continues. It continues on to people who abuse, verbally abuse, and physically abuse our minorities. As a member of Asian descent, I am also on the same side as Damien here. I think our minorities are being hurt verbally and physically because of the words of Trump, who is instigating these kinds of acts of violence and things as such.
Yeah,
it's not okay.
It's just gross. I think it's disgusting. It's a disgrace to the United States of America. And you know, to be here sitting as a 15-year-old and talking about a man that's 76, 78 maybe now years old, and to be having to use this language and to know what he's doing is morally wrong. I'm not talking from a political standpoint. I'm not talking as a Democrat or as a Republican or as an independent. I'm talking as a human being. His actions are morally wrong, his word choice is morally incorrect, and it is damaging us every single day.
I think that it is important that we look past our partisan lines, our political lines, and blur these lines and think about it as rational people and use our heads. Because in today's world, a lot of people just do not use their heads. And we're looking at this even in the protests that are occurring today. We're seeing Santa Cruz police chiefs taking a knee with peaceful protesters during demonstrations in Santa Cruz, California. It's not about politics. It's about equal acceptance, and it's about using your head past all political lines.
I agree. And I think that maybe that's why these riots have been instigated. I think my African-American brothers and sisters, my Hispanic brothers and sisters, my Asians, my Jews, all of us, we are tired of being politics. We're tired of being the black vote, the Hispanic vote. How do you get the Latino vote? How do you get the Asian vote? It's becoming sickening to us. It just needs to be, how do you get the American vote? And we've asked for it for 60 years now, since Martin Luther King was assassinated, since beyond then, since the Civil War, there was a war fought in this nation, and some might say that it was fought over states' rights, but I'll say to you, states' rights over what? It was states' rights over being able to have slaves. And you can look at countless political statements at the time, but it goes beyond that. It goes beyond that. We just want to be treated as humans, first and foremost, and secondly, as Americans, and not as political pawns in a game of chess.
I couldn't agree more. I think it's a very, very powerful statement that you brought up there. And I think that it is important that we stop fighting within each other to increase racial tensions and look at each other as a unitary human race. Because that line has been blurred very, very much. And I'm looking at my friends over discussions on text, on Snapchat, and things like this. And a lot of us as Americans are using African-American looters to really shame the Black Lives Matter movement and talking about these looters as just terrible people. But we're not looking at the point that when we're referring to these as Black people, they aren't entirely Black people. We're seeing looters that are white, that are from every region, creed, and group who are looting these facilities and taking advantage of George Floyd's death. And that, to me, is very riveting, that these white people are going out, these Asians, these Latinos, all these people are going out and looting places to place a bad name upon the Black community. Because, you know, it is simply trying to divide our nation even more, even amidst this big crisis. Thoughts on that one?
I believe that you do have these people that are going out and trying to make Black Lives Matter look bad. But I think that you also have people that are just sick and tired. They're just tired of the way that we're being treated as Americans.
I agree, and it is an issue that deserves a recognition on the national scale, because when we're referring to these looters and these individuals,
in this video, I'll show you how to set up and manage live streams
and things like this. The issue is that we're not referring to them as people. We're not referring to why they're doing it. We're not asking ourselves what is causing this. We're just simply labeling them as people who are just greedy for attention and for money instead of looking at why they're doing it.
Yeah.
And what effect they want to achieve.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with you. I agree with you 100%. I'm trying to check out the stream here, just make sure that everything's running well. Let me see.
You know, I'm in Chicago right now, Damien, and I am constantly hearing things about Aurora, about the city of Chicago, with regards to this whole crisis that's going on right now. And our mayor, Chicago's mayor, Lori Lightfoot, basically, she said, F you in a news commercial to President Trump. So I think tensions, even politically, are reaching a fever pitch in which there is a point of no return. And I think that our next president, Margaret Mabee, needs to really, really, you know, flatten these racial tensions, these political tensions, and call for unity. And use a rhetoric that calls for unity. Because the words that we use as Americans, that we talk about, that we tweet, that we text, that we bring forth onto a public standpoint are very, very important, and they do cause opinions, they cause discussions, and they cause actions. And our president needs to know that what he does causes discussion.
Okay, so I want to apologize because we've been having a really good discussion, but what's it called? The stream was uploaded as private, so now it's public, so now everyone can see it. However, I'm going to take snippets from whatever we're saying and make it into a video later, so it doesn't really necessarily affect the discussion that we were having. But I just want to welcome anyone that just joined the stream. We had, I think, two viewers. It was a confusing thing. We're trying to get this whole stream set up. But me and Varun were having a very good political discussion. You guys will be able to check it out later on my YouTube page. We're going to do different segments and stuff. And I think that we're having a very positive political discussion here. So I want to say welcome to any viewers that are now tuning in. I think I want to move on to what SpaceX did. I know that we're having a very in-depth political discussion about the riots that are happening in the United States of America right now. But I think it's a discussion to be had. I think what SpaceX did it's incredible. I think that it's something to look at in awe at. And I think it's something that's going to lead us and propel us as humanity into the future, and maybe something that can even unify us in these difficult times.
Right. I have not got much information about what SpaceX has done, so if you want to go over that for me, honestly. I've just read a couple of news articles and tweets about it, but not too much information from my part.
Yeah, so basically SpaceX became the first commercial company to launch anything, any astronauts, into space, and they have become the first commercial company to do so in the United States and worldwide, as I had mentioned. But I was going back on the fact that it's been 9 years since we've launched anything on American soil, and 9 years no more. We are back in the space race. We're back into competing for space exploration. NASA is now launching their goal to go to the moon and then on to Mars. And I think that, as I was saying, it's something that we can use to unify us in the future.
I was about to agree. I was going to say the same exact thing. And I think that things like this, things that advance our nation, they bring pride into the American people that really trumps the amount of division that we have and the amount of different, you know, variations of America that we see within many of our political parties and our racial groups. I think it makes us proud to be Americans, no matter what's going on today. It is that American drive and that American passion to achieve more and to do greater in the future.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree with you more, Varun. I think that it's gonna, you know, we saw it in the 60s. It was a big pushing factor in the 60s, and you're starting to pull parallels between now and the 60s, even in America's involvement in the space race. You know, in the 60s, a big perpetrator in the advancements in not only our technology but our social situation was this push for America to go to space. So now we're gonna see, can it be this push for America to be the first ones to go on Mars? Will that bring us closer as a nation, or will faulty leadership cause a greater divide that not even that can repair?
Right, it's a valid question. It is, and yeah, the future of America is very uncertain to me. And I think that it depends upon what we do within our nation and what kinds of policies we bring forth. And what kinds of things that we do to encourage the American people to do more and to be proud of the nation that we are part of.
I think that it comes back to one word, a word that holds a lot of power, and that word is vote. I think if we can vote correctly and we can vote for people who represent our American ideals, that we will see this country in unity maybe greater in the future than ever before. And I think this is a good opportunity. I think that there's, you know, a little bit of, there's always sun after the storm. And I think that right now we're in a storm and we're waiting for a really bright sunshine to clear everything up. And I think that post-November, we would be able to achieve that. I really do.
We've got to have hope. We have to have hope, and hope is what drives us to succeed. And I think past November, there are so many issues that, like climate change, like healthcare and things like this that need to be reformed. But right now, we have one overbearing issue, and that can be solved by the vote. I encourage everybody watching this podcast to use their vote if you can vote very wisely, because Damien and I personally, we can't vote yet. Yes. We're still juniors in high school, and we're using this platform to encourage and to educate people who can vote. And I think the vote is a very important thing for us as American people, because it allows us to tell people that we care and that we want our voices to be heard. And our voice is one of the biggest things that we've been provided by the Constitution, and we should use it.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I agree with Varun, and it's sad to be seeing our voices taken from us. I was talking to Varun prior to doing the podcast a couple days ago, and I mentioned the fact that, you know, we have this freedom of speech in America, but I think that the murder of George Floyd was more than just tragic. I think it was symbolic of how minorities have felt in America. And what I told Varun was, it's hard to express that freedom of speech when you have a system that has their knee on your throat.
And Greg Popovich said it earlier today, the system needs to change. And we built this nation upon very few principles. And the principles that we see today are not being supported in any measure, I don't think. And the First Amendment, especially the freedom of speech, is not being supported whatsoever. You saw a CNN reporter get arrested for absolutely no reason reporting at a protest site. That is an issue that we have to deal with today, because that is a blatant form of oppression and of restriction of our freedom of speech, and that is simply not okay. As an American, I am outraged, and I think you should be as well.
Well, you know, I was going to say that the reason that he was arrested was because he was a black reporter, but I don't even think that that's fair to say anymore, because now you see even white reporters being harassed by police. I mean, I don't know if you saw the video on Twitter that was going around where it's a white reporter and her cameraman being shot by what looks to be a paintball gun by a police officer. It's atrocious. I mean, I obviously racism is an issue in America, but you have to ask, does it go beyond that? Is it power-hungry people looking to become police officers and take advantage of the trust that we give to our protectors in order to feed that thirst for power?
I think it does. And I think our police definitely do need some policing, a lot of policing today, because I'm seeing, you know, brutality crosses race lines, it crosses gender lines, and it crosses religion, creed, origin, any of these things. I'm looking at Twitter and I'm seeing videos of white teenagers, white children being pepper sprayed.
Yeah.
That is an issue that we have to deal with today, because that's not about race. That's about these people not following through with their oaths they took to be police officers, because they, you know, they swore to serve our nation.
Yeah.
And they swore to uphold their duty, their honor. That honor code is being completely abolished, yeah, not given its respect.
Yeah, well, you have to look at this, and you know, it's not the first time you see white people being pepper sprayed or white people being hosed down or shot with paintball guns. It only happens when our white brothers and sisters decide to take a stand with us. That's the only time where you really see police officers treat them this way. And it's unfortunate, but it goes back to the question of why do these police officers feel the need to quench their power for thirst in this way? Their thirst for power, rather, sorry.
And I think it does also, you know, there's a big point to be made that not all police officers are brutal, and they don't follow their oath and their duty. I've seen multiple occasions of police officers who have been supporting protesters and who have been supporting the BLM movement. The issue, I think, that is deep-rooted within our nation and our world is systemic racism. Because I am seeing so many people who are coming to me, going on Snapchat, social media, and talking about how using the N-word and talking about how these people have no right to make a stand. And systemic racism is within the hearts and souls of many of our Americans. And I think the police officers who are doing these acts of police brutality, Damien, do have a sort of white supremacy and a sort of racism within themselves.
Well, I want to bring up this discussion of systemic racism, because it's something that's very difficult, I think, for white America to understand, and it's something difficult for minorities to understand. But it really starts with this. You have the first interaction with white people on the American continent and Africans from the African continent be a slave trade. The first contact ever made by Africans and whites on this continent was from a Dutch merchant that brought them over here. The first relationship ever developed was a master-slave relationship. And that's where it starts. You have to understand that we have oppressed these people. And then when they were freed, we oppressed them more. We created Jim Crow laws. We limited them to areas where, you know, you can compare even the water fountains that they were drinking water from to the water fountains that a white person was drinking water from. The schools that a black person was going to, and then the schools that a white person was going to, once you had Plessy versus Ferguson in the United States. And unfortunately, you know, Brown v. Board of Education reversed the rule of Plessy versus Ferguson, but that didn't change the effect that it had on us as a nation. You had African Americans living in impoverished communities because of the fact that they didn't have the support of a system that was already there. You had people living in a third world country in what was considered a first world country. You would go to the ghettos and you would go to the suburbs, and it was two different worlds. And now we ask ourselves, why do they turn to violence? Why do we see a surge in African Americans becoming violent? And it's because of the fact that they've been oppressed throughout history.
Right, and it took so long for us to get here. It took over a century for us to go to slavery, to the equality, or not even equality, but the sort of
civil the sort acceptance of medium we have. I think civil acceptance medium would be a okay term for it.
Yeah, I don't even know what to call it, to be honest, because we had slavery, and now I don't know what to call it. I think it is a perception of equality, but it is not equal in any measure.
Yeah.
Because minorities and majorities are not supported in the same way, seen in the same light. And that is an issue that we need to face today if we want to have any shot of progressing into a brighter world, into a brighter future. Because that is the root of many, many issues in education, healthcare, the climate. I think it's all rooted in our acceptance and our understanding of each other.
Well, you know, I was having a discussion with someone the other day, and, you know, we were talking about why we see African Americans be subject to these things. And I don't necessarily, again, it comes back, you have to think about the systemic oppression, you have to think about systemic racism, and then you have to think about true racism. In these communities where you see these African Americans being oppressed, oftentimes you do see a surge in violence. And unfortunately, the surge in violence has been because of, you know, you leave these people with no other option. You have hospitals that don't care for them because you have employees that are working at underfunded, understaffed hospitals. So they go there and then they have to pay for their medical bills. And you offer a 15-year-old the chance to pay for his mother's medical bills or for her to be indebted for the rest of her life. And all he has to do is sell a brick or sell drugs or push this or that. I mean, it's a no-brainer for them. And unfortunately, they're left in these situations far too often. And then you have police officers that have to deal with this. And you have police officers that don't want to be working in these situations. You know, they want to, unfortunately, they're scared. They're scared for their lives too. And they're left in ghettos where no one is happy, where violence is the answer, because violence is the only way that they can really survive in these areas.
Right, and we talked about the vote and how important the vote is in this November and later on. I think that people are rioting, Damian, and people are protesting and things like this because not only do their votes not have enough power as we deem them to be. So, you know, honestly, the vote is an important thing, but even under Barack Obama, these same exact atrocities, you know, were happening. And that is really an issue to see that racism was even present then. And you know, I don't know how we can stop that. I think it's up to us to vote first of all, and to also go out and speak to our community and to say, no, this is wrong. And do things like me and you are doing and talking to people and just expressing our opinions.
Yeah, I think discussion is the way to fix it. And I think discussion about a lot of things is the way to fix it. And it, first and foremost, I think if we really want to fix it, we have to join arms and take a stand against the issues. But that all begins with acceptance. So in order for us to really fix what's going on, we really have to create a discussion about what's going on. So, for example, a big perpetrator of what's going on in African-American communities is the fact that a lot of African-American communities suffer from financial illiteracy. And if we create a discussion about that, then we can create a discussion about how can we make these African-American communities more financially literate. And then how can we help them thrive? And then from there, they can pick themselves up. But we haven't offered that to them. You know, we have them living in school, or we have them living in homes that the government supplies them because they can't afford anything else. And we just leave them there. You know, we're leaving them behind as more of us are developing, as we're developing a bigger education at younger ages. You know, you used to have classes that were taught in college now being taught in high school, and classes that were taught in high school now being taught in middle school, while they're still suffering to, you know, learn about the basics of life.
You know what? I agree. And I think that we're setting a blind eye to the issues that these people, these minorities, African Americans face in our world because we are too obsessed with ourselves and our high class lifestyles that we can't look past that and see what is occurring in our nation. And it goes back to any topics in our world today. College tuition being too high, climate change, and even race, the biggest issue today. We are not seeing the issues because we are turning a blind eye to it voluntarily.
Yeah.
We are doing it on our own accord. And I think the reason is the American people are not ready to see the reality of things. A lot of people are not ready to see the reality and to do something about it. And I think it begins with us accepting what's going on right now, and Damian, it is that's the first step. It's about recognizing it, accepting it, and moving forward to band together and fight against it.
Yeah, well, I think the first step, again, it's my white brothers and sisters realizing that they do have a privilege in America. And it's hard, I think, talking to people, to my white friends. It's hard for them to accept that because they go, you know, I haven't been racist. I didn't own slaves. I haven't used the N-word. I haven't done this or that that could be seen as racist. But at the end of the day, it's understanding the systemic racism, the privilege that they endure as just being, or for just being white in America, for being able to have parents that have had financial literacy and education passed down you know, the grandpa's will and the mom's will passed down, which is something that you even fail to see in African-American communities. You know, a lot of these people don't even know what a will are. And it's not to speak down on them. It's to speak down on us as a society, that we have left them so far behind that they're missing key things in order to thrive, as many of the people that are living in Bel Air, that are living in Beverly Hills, that are living in multi-million dollar apartments in New York City, that they have been permitted to be educated about.
Yeah, and I couldn't agree more, because we are forgetting our roots, we're forgetting where we came from, and we are simply ignoring ignoring how Black America has lived. You know, we are enjoying Black hip hop, jazz. All of these things are a testament to Black culture, but we're not supporting the Black community. And that is an issue, because when you're supporting one side of things, why can't you see the other?
Yeah.
We are seeing Black excellence, but we are shedding a blind eye towards the Black community.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that, in my opinion, is a big issue.
Yeah. I mean, and then you also have people taking their culture from them or shunning them for their culture. You know, I think a lot of white Americans can't understand why the N-word is used within the Black community. But you have to understand this. You took Africans from their continent. You didn't allow them to practice their religion. You didn't allow them to do their dances, speak their language. And the only way that you talked to them was using a word that demeaned them. A word that was used to insult them. So they took it in as their culture. They took it in as their idea. You identified them and now you shun them for using the identification that you gave them. It's something that it's a very double-headed coin, and it's a discussion that I think in America we're afraid to have. And I think that it's a scary discussion because, again, it's hard to look at yourself in the mirror and go, you know, maybe I have racism deep inside of me.
Right. And I think that you're completely right, and that racism is hidden within many, many people today, and it is only brought out in action. And many people, you know, they're talking about how white privilege does not exist, and how, you know, topics like that. And I'm looking at them and I'm saying, white privilege does exist. And things like these are hard to recognize, but they do exist. And behind this smokescreen that you're having within your mind, you have to sit out there and look at yourself and rationally think, what is my stance on these topics? Is it guided by my political party? Is it guided by Fox News? Is it guided by CNN? Or is it guided by me and my views and my opinions?
Yeah, I agree with you. And again, I think that it goes beyond what I think the perception of white privilege is. I think that a lot of people think of white privilege, again, not to linger on a financial literacy, but I mean, just being the word choice, the words that you grow around, the education that you grow around, you have more parents that go to college when you're white. You have faster response time from police departments when you're white. It's the small things that are overlooked. The way that you use words, the books that are on your shelf, it's the little things that are overlooked that are considered privilege. Even the most minute details can go such a long way. I mean, it's the discussions that you have at the dinner table and who you have sitting there with you. That is what privilege is. And I think that we're looking at privilege in a negative light and saying that if I have white privilege, I must hate Black people. And that's not the discussion that we're trying to provoke here in Politateen and in the discussions that we're trying to have. We're trying to look at what's the root of the problem. And we're trying to create a discussion about how can we snip that root? How can we stop it there? And it's the little things. It's the little things that I think are overlooked in our society.
And quite honestly, discussing white privilege and how it is within America is not reverse racism. We are not, you know, shunning white people for something they have no power over. I think that white privilege is present within America in a very high measure, but that's not because of white people themselves. It is because of how our system is built. And to change white privilege and to offer Black people and minorities the opportunities that white people do receive within our nation, we have to change the system. Quoting Greg Popovich, we have to change our system as the American people. And that begins, number one, with recognizing the issues today, with racism, recognizing white privilege. And it is not reverse racism in my point of view. I think we have to recognize the privileges that we have been bestowed with.
Yeah.
Because it just means that we've been given a head start, and that needs to change.
Yeah, well, I mean, how can you call it reverse racism when in the state of Georgia, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it was 60% of the coronavirus deaths were African Americans when they only represent, I think it was 15% of the population or something along those lines. You can fact check me on that, but it's again, it goes back to this discussion of white privilege, you know, the socioeconomic discussion that we're afraid to have because of us being seen as, you know, oh, we hate white people, or oh, we hate black people. It's not about hate. It's about love and how we can take that next step in order to understand each other.
Right. And I do agree that, in a sense, all lives matter, but that begins with recognizing that Black lives matter. And that is an important first step in the movement that we want to figure out, that we want to continue, and we want to understand that all lives matter. And a bunch of my friends on social media, text messaging again, have, you know, gone off to me about how white privilege has made them seem like they have been underappreciated or put into a stereotype of people who are just racist and given an opportunity and, you know, forced to utilize that and to become successful people. I don't think so, personally. I think that the bigger issue is that we're not recognizing that people do have a head start. Yeah. And people are saying, no, I'm expected to do something. No, you're not. You're given a head start.
Yeah.
And that is the real issue here.
Yeah. I think that it's important to understand also where these white people are coming from. I mean, again, it's hard to look at yourself in the mirror and admit that you've had some things given to you. I have to admit, from a standpoint of a community member of the community that I'm in, living in the community that I do live in, that I have had a head start over other people. And it's not something that, you know, I decided. It's not something that I necessarily had a say in, but it's a fact that I can't avoid. I am, you know, in a two-parent household. I live in a good community, and that's a privilege unto itself. And I have to admit that, and I have to admit that there's those that are underprivileged, that are less privileged than me, and there's those that are more privileged than me, and we just have to discuss how we can all get onto a level playing field, being born in the situations that we're born in.
Right, and you know, I agree firsthand. I was born into a two-parent household, and later on in life, my parents divorced, and I had to live with single parents for most of my life. And through that experience, I have seen that you know, the amount of privilege and the amount of benefits and the amount of support that I received before my parents divorced was so much. And after that, it really changed. The playing field changed for me, and I had to put in more work on my part to succeed in the way I did before. And that's the same thing. We just have to recognize that we have different opportunities based upon our situations, and that is a hard reality, a harsh reality, but it is a reality nonetheless.
Yeah, and I think it starts with accepting the fact that we're different, but we're all the same. If you understand what I'm saying, we might start with a different skin color in life. We might start with a different number of parents present within our life. We might start with different amount of commas in our parents' bank accounts, different zip codes, area codes, but at the end of the day, we all bleed, we all breathe, and that's unless you have a system that puts their knee on your throat and takes your life from you.
It's a great point. And yeah, I think we need to understand that people are born into different situations, and we need to change and adapt our system to accommodate these people in their various situations. And with that, I think it's been almost an hour since we've ended our podcast, and I think it's important that we wrap this up really quickly. I want to thank you all for being here on my behalf, on Polititeen's behalf, for joining our podcast, and for listening to our first story on the wrongful death of George Floyd and the race riots in America today. I thank you all for being so patient and for listening to our point of view, because I'm just honestly, as a person, very, very glad to tell you and to preach my perspective on this crisis. Thank you so much. And Damien, go ahead.
Yeah. So again, I apologize for all the technical issues. Hopefully, starting with the next podcast, we'll have those all resolved. I think it's a great learning experience, but I'm happy that me and Varun were just both able to finally go out there and do it. All the complications that we were having at the beginning. I think that we're only going to grow, and I think that I think that we're going to become more educated in our stances, and hopefully we're going to create a discussion in young Americans, and eventually, hopefully, create a discussion in everyone's life, and be able to talk about issues that we weren't talking about before. I want to say, go follow us on Twitter. We do tweet a lot. If you want to interact with our community, if you want to become an active member in our community, I would say right now Twitter is the best way to do that. It's at Politateen.
Politateen Show, our handle.
Yeah, at Politateen Show. There you go. You know, tweet at us anything that you think that we should talk about. Be sure to, you know, add us, to forward it to us, to message us. And we'll be sure to try to get back to you. But beyond that, I think that this was a very good pilot episode. And I think that it's very important that we have these sort of discussions as Americans.
Right. And hey, it was a good time. Thank you all so much for joining, and peace out. Stay safe during the virus.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, guys.
Hey, y'all. Varun here. If you enjoyed today's podcast, please go to our Twitter and follow us at Politateen Show. Shoot us a tweet whenever you want, and really show your support via this manner. And please email us at politateenpodcast@gmail.com whenever you have any questions about interviews, our show, our podcasters, and anything of that nature. We'd like to thank you all for watching today's episode, and stay tuned for next week's episode of Politateen.